You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
This is the William Hill Golf Podcast. Go to news.williamhill.com for all the podcasts or search William Hill Radio on iTunes.
Hello and a very warm welcome along to the William Hill Golf Podcast. Another couple of events to preview this week. Sam Norris here standing in for Dave Kellner, and Dave Tindall is the man joining me to eye up two events this week on what might just be a tricky week of golf betting. How are you, Dave?
Yes, I'm very good. Thank you, Sam, and you put it very correctly there. A tricky week.
Yeah.
Tricky. You always get the tricky weeks, don't you?
I do, yeah. I do enjoy my occasional guest appearance on the golf podcast, but the three times I've done it this season, I've done the Masters, which was brilliant, fully understand how that works, and I've had the Perth Super 6, which was an interesting format, and the Golf 6s this week, which seems even more quirky. Yeah.
Yes, definitely.
Indeed. And we've got the added factor of the fact that the Wells Fargo is being played at a golf course that hasn't hosted a PGA Tour event to date as well, so that just further muddies the waters betting-wise this week.
Exactly, a tricky week, but we shall try our best.
Indeed. Let's look back on last week's action first of all then, Dave, beginning with the Zurich Classic of New Orleans. That was won by Jonas Blixt and Cameron Smith, who saw off Kevin Kisner and Scott Brown in a playoff. First of all, what did you make of the revised format last week?
Yeah, the pairs format. I'm certainly not against some shaking it up a little bit.
Yep.
But in terms of me actually watching it, I haven't got a lot to contribute because, A, we sort of live in the real world, don't we? It was the bank holiday weekend.
Yeah.
B, the PGA Tour scoreboard was just broken.
Right.
So I had no idea what was happening.
Yeah, yeah.
I think I went on Twitter and said they can put a man on the moon, but I can't adjust to a pairs format. And a couple of tips I did put up, they were kind of nowhere, at least I think they were nowhere.
Yeah.
The scoreboard wasn't particularly helpful.
Yeah.
So I kind of, my interest waned, shall we say. But it sounded like it was a good finish, obviously. It went
to
a playoff.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
After Kevin Kisner chipped in for eagle
to
take it to extra time. But I have to say, if there's anyone out there who backed Cameron Smith and Jonas Blixt, reveal yourself because you are geniuses.
Indeed. We seem to be seeing more and more of these pairs formats. As a general rule, are you a fan or...?
I'm only a fan in the sense I think they just break it up.
Mix it up a little bit, yeah.
And then you're almost glad to get back to stroke play afterwards. But possibly, you know, had I backed the winners last week, how that would have happened, I don't know. But I might have been a little bit more, what a great thing this is.
Yes.
But I think the players seem to enjoy it.
Yeah.
It attracted a good field. I think team play is always good. To play yourself just as a betting event. Now obviously we are talking about betting on this podcast.
Sure.
I'm not so sure.
Yeah. Okay. And the China Open as well last week, which is a more conventional format.
Yeah.
That also went to a playoff with Alexander Levy seeing off Dylan Fratelli for the prize there in China. Thoughts on his performance last week?
Yeah, I mean that was something we could have predicted. He was quite short, I think, with us, Alexander Levy. I think he was 20s.
Right.
Which I don't know if he made the play you don't want to win, but I think we talked about him, and that's his second win in the Volvo China Open, so he certainly likes the country. He's played well in China in other events as well. And Dylan Fratelli, the South African, he'd been in really good form as well. So there was plenty of logic running through that event. So I think a few people might have been on Alexander Levy. And of course, he's French. One extra incentive for him is trying to qualify for next year's Ryder Cup, which is in France, of course. He spoke about that afterwards. So wouldn't be surprised if he goes in again at some point this year, because he's an attacking player, and when he gets it going, he can shoot some low numbers and win events.
Got a chance to see him again, of course, this weekend in the Golf Sixes event. We'll get to that in due course, Dave. We'll begin with the Wells Fargo Championship then to kickstart the previews this week. An event usually played at the Quail Hollow Club, renowned for one of the more trickier finishes on the tour, with the 16th, 17th and 18th often separating the men from the boys there at the Quail Hollow Club. But that particular golf course is going to play host to the PGA Championships in August, so the Wells Fargo moves to the Eagle Point Golf Club for the 2017 renewal. Of course, it's never hosted a PGA Tour event to date, so that muddies the water betting-wise slightly. It's a Tom Fazio-designed course that measures in at 7,259 yards and plays to a par of 72. But from what I've gleaned from social media, quite a few of the players are seemingly warming to the course, having played a few practice rounds there. One or two are saying plenty of favourable things about it.
Yeah, I think it is a really good course.
Yeah.
It's the same design, Tom Fazio, as Quail Hollow. Quail Hollow is a great course, and that's a really good venue for the PGA, so I'm looking forward to that later in the summer. But yeah, this is a good course. In terms of betting, then, because there is that lack of course form, I've kind of nailed my colours to two sort of local guys who know it more than most.
Okay. Historically, this event has produced some thrilling finishes. Four of the last six runnings have gone to a playoff, with only JB Holmes' one-shot victory in 2014 and Rory McIlroy's emphatic score of 21 under par in 2015, the only two times in the last six runnings we've seen this go to a playoff. But given that we're playing on a different course to usual, it might not set up the grandstand finish that we often see in this event. A quick spin through the betting then. Dustin Johnson, all eyes will be on him presumably this week at 9-2. John Rahm 11-1. Adam Scott 20s. Paul Casey 20s. Kevin Kisner 25s with Phil Mickelson at 33-1 for Bill Haas, Daniel Berger, Webb Simpson and Wesley Bryan. 40-1 and bigger prices for the rest of them. For this Wells Fargo event, Dustin Johnson, first time we've seen him on a golf course since his freak accident that ruled him out of the Masters, and plenty will be having a BDI on him for this event, because given the three previous events that he's played before the Masters, he was a winner on all three occasions.
Yeah, he went into the Masters as the hottest player in golf and then fell down the stairs.
Indeed.
Which was all a bit strange.
You can't have it all, can you?
No, just the fine margins of life.
Indeed.
So yeah, you could argue that he was a similar-ish price to win the Masters. Now he's only, he's 9-2 to win a pretty modest field here. So in theory, we could be sat here next week and saying, oh, that was so obvious. Why didn't we just back him at 9-2? Maybe he should be, 2-1 or something in a field like this.
Yeah.
Is that good? But we're guessing, aren't we, with his back injury.
His well-being.
He's probably guessing himself. If one sort of the ball goes in the rough a little bit and he has to hack it a little bit, does it twinge? I don't know. So I'm willing to let him go at 9-2, I think.
Yeah, that's fair enough. And of course, as always, as you said, Dustin Johnson will be guessing him. It'll always be in the back of his mind, even the first swing on the first tee.
Yeah.
You'll be thinking, and you don't want any sort of distractions like that when you're taking 9-2 about a player to win a golf tournament.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you want everything in your favour. And coming back from injury, we are just guessing. So, I will let him go this week.
Of the other market principals then, John Rahm has had a superb breakthrough year so far. He's 11-1 in the betting. Despite the fact he's been incredibly good this year and probably went into the Masters only being bettered by Dustin Johnson, it's been a superb year for John Rahm. Were you surprised to see him as short as this?
I kind of expected it, but it's not a price.
You knew you'd be taking it on it if it was.
I guess he's not going to go off at any sort of price at the moment with his good play in the WGC events so recent in the memory. And he did play well at the Masters until three rounds, but then he just let it go on the Sunday over the weekend a little bit. So I suppose with him, you can argue all the courses he's playing this year are new to him because he's a rookie, and therefore he should slot in really well on this one as well. But again, the 11-1... I just want an extra edge somewhere, and I'm not quite sure where I've got it. He's coming off the Masters where he went backwards a little bit and he's had a few weeks off. Maybe I'd want him at 11-1 to have come second last week and looking absolutely on fire.
Okay, fair enough. It's then 20-1 for Adam Scott and Paul Casey. Did you have either of them on your mind, on your shortlist?
Well, the problem with Paul Casey is he's playing some great golf, but he's only won once in America and that was 2009, so it's kind of starting to become a long time ago that.
That's quite interesting. That I wouldn't. You'd have just assumed that
he's presumed to have a couple of wins in the last two or three years, but he just hasn't.
That is interesting.
Yeah, he seems to find one or two too good every week. Yeah, 20-1 is still an each way price in any man's language. But in terms of the win bet here, again, for him to be 20-1, I'd want more. I'd rather back him at a bigger price in a bigger event, to be honest.
Okay, yeah, that's
that kind of thing. Adam Scott tied ninth at Augusta National, was actually his best finisher of the year, so he's not really on it at the minute for me, Adam Scott. I read some quotes from him in his final round at Augusta and he said he just didn't hit it very well, so there's nothing leaping out from him either, really.
Okay, it is a fifth of the odds place, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 for each way bets on the Wells Fargo. You said you've gone for a couple of local players then, Dave. Let's get to your picks then for this week's event.
Yeah, it's certainly not been particularly clever, but Webb Simpson is a member at Eagle Point, so why not back him? I've read stuff like, oh, you always find that someone's a member, and then they just doesn't mean to say, yeah, because you're a member, you automatically then are absolutely brilliant on it.
Yeah,
and you
sure
can argue that for most of the year it's set up differently.
Yes.
But with him, he always seems to play well in North Carolina, which is his home state. He played this course, plays it a lot, goes on a little sort of annual boys, little sort of trip there.
Right.
Plays it a few times a year. Grew up, spent some of his child in the local area, really got close ties. But the thing for me is he's got other really good form in North Carolina.
Okay.
So when the PGA Tour comes to him, his neck of the woods, he's really good. So looking at his results there, he's made 13 of his last four cuts in North Carolina, and he's got a win, a second, a fourth, a fifth, and a sixth. That's a lot of good form, for Webb Simpson. So the only real other check you want to do on him is he playing well enough? Well, yes, I think he is. He finished runner-up in Phoenix earlier this year. Then last time we saw him, he was playing really, really well at Hilton Head. There was, I think he was third going into the final round in that event, which I think is South Carolina. So again,
right,
fairly.
Yeah.
It went a little bit backwards on the final day, but it was another good sign that he's playing some good golf. So I just think, put it all together, 33-1. He's a guy, I think. He won the US Open on a really difficult course. I'm not saying this is a US Open course, but just he's someone I've got down as mentally strong. I think maybe that's why he does well in his home events, because other players talk about all the distractions. Everyone's saying, get me a ticket and all this.
Yeah, sure.
But he seems to be able to deal with all the sort of extra noise. So I think 33-1 is quite a good price.
33-1 then for Webb Simpson. And pick number two, Dave?
Yeah, another local guy, Bill Haas. And Mike's always keen on Bill Haas. I wondered if Mike or Dave had been with us today, they might have put him up. So I'll put it up kind of as a sort of podcast team bet, if you like.
I'm sure they'll take the credit if he wins and blame it all on you if he bombs out.
Oh, well, fair enough. We are a team. Talking about Paul Casey earlier, he's only won once in the PGA Tour. Well, Bill Haas has won six times. I don't think he really gets the credit he deserves. I think, because he's sort of, I don't know, he's a little bit sort of bland. He's not the most exciting player, and he doesn't really get the credit he deserves, I don't think. He's not the kind of hot young thing or anything like that. So 33-1 again, Bill Haas. He's another who plays well in his home state. He's got some really good form in the Wyndham Championship in North Carolina, which is an event Webb Simpson won, actually. So I think he plays some really nice golf there. He's got some really good stats this season as well. He's fifth in scrambling. So if he misses the green, you know, he gets up and down more than most, but he hits lots of greens anyway. He's 13th in greens in regulation. Good from sand, 25th. And just the scoring average, all these little bits, well, it's the main thing is how quickly can you get it in the hole?
Yeah.
And he's 15th in scoring average, and that'll be one of the best by far in this week's field. So again, I read the local sort of newspaper website, and they said he's a frequent visitor to the course.
Right,
he's got
okay.
a little bit of edge there. It's bent grass greens this week, and he does well on those. So all little bits together. I think he's another good bet at 33-1. It's fairly obvious logic, isn't it? The fact that they know the course better than most.
Course,
But they do win events. They've both won big events before. And you know, I'm not backing them at 14s or 16s. 33s is still decent in the field, and if you argue that Dustin Johnson is there for the taking a little bit, or we're not sure, then he takes a chunk of the market. So you get in 33s when maybe these guys would have been 25, 22. So I think 33s is fine.
Yeah, fair enough. With definite question marks at least hanging over Dustin Johnson at 9-2. Anybody come close to making the shortlist this week, Dave?
Yeah, Bud Cawley's playing some nice golf. He's 40-1. He's had top 10s the last 3 weeks. He got fifth with Justin Thomas in the pairs at Zurich Classic, so that's some really good form. He has been struggling with a shoulder injury in the last couple of years. I think he played last year on a medical exemption.
Right.
So he now is fit, and I think he's just going out there and enjoying himself, so there's no reason why that can't continue again. Patrick Reed came back into a little bit of form. He's 40-1. Last week in the pairs, probably the fact that it was a pairs and it made him think about Ryder Cups, where he's a bit of a beast.
So he
came back to form a little bit there. But beyond that, nothing too much is jumping out. I can't really get too excited about anyone at a big price. I suppose Lucas Glover at 80s, he's won the tournament when it was at Quail Hollow. thing with him is his putting is just so kind of unreliable.
Right.
But we'll see. He could certainly run into a place at 80-1. He's certainly hitting it great from tee to green at the moment.
Okay, good stuff. But Webb Simpson and Bill Haas, the main picks then in the Wells Fargo Championships. Let's turn our attention now to the European Tour event this week. And it's a new tour event. The Golf Sixes has its inaugural tournament. And they play this over the course of the weekend. So it begins on Saturday and finishes on Sunday. It's a new event on tour, as mentioned, and reads sort of like a combination of the World Cup of Golf and the Perth Super Six in its format. 16 teams of two players, each representing a nation. They compete in greensomes match play format, meaning both players in each team get the chance to tee off. Then the better ball is chosen and they complete the hole in alternative strokes from there. As mentioned, the event begins on a Saturday with the teams divided up into four groups of four, with the top two teams from each group progressing to knockout stages before the quarterfinal, semi-final, third-place playoff and the final are completed on Sunday. Each match is played over six holes, and during the group stages, it's 3 points for a win, 1 point for a draw and 0 points, of course, for a loss. It's being held at the Centurion Golf Club in St Albans, and the six holes in play play to a par of 24 and measure in at 2,276 yards. The event also features a shot clock, meaning players must play their shot in 40 seconds or they'll fall foul of a penalty. I believe I've got the format right there, Dave. Is that how you understand it to be as well?
I've read it, yes. Yeah. So the main things being then, it's pairs again.
Yep.
Only six holes, which is the big sort of, oh, right, okay.
Yeah.
And it's only on the weekend. So it is a big shake-up from what we're used to normally, Thursday to Sunday stroke play.
Yes.
This is something very different. I suppose the one thing I discussed with Matt Cooper, another golf writer, we were saying, why couldn't it have been that England could have had like about five teams? Did it have to be countries? Does it really add to it that it's,
I suppose,
Portugal
not,
and
not,
India? Could they have?
Not when you've already got a World Cup of Golf event that's played at another time of the year. If this was the sole country's event, then I could maybe see it. But they already have one, don't they?
Yeah, I think there's some English guys. You know, plenty would have signed up for this, I think.
Yeah, sure.
And I think they would have maybe got more. I mean, sporting events in England are always supported really, really well.
Yes.
But I think it would have just given spectators a little bit more to go at. You know, how many people are really going to be watching Richard Gouvier and Joseph Philippe Lima? I'm not sure when it could have been.
Yeah.
I don't know, Luke Donald. And I'm guessing that a few of them would have signed up. But there's a few decent names in there, but it's a tricky one.
Yeah, the betting has England as favourites. 7-1 for France, 8-1 for Thailand, 9-1 for Denmark, 10s and bigger for the rest of them. And as you quite rightly mentioned, Dave, the fact that it's six-hole match play from the outset, with no real course form to speak of either. I don't want to say the word lottery, but...
But you have.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I can't really argue. I suppose, the only precedent we've got is that World Super Six Perth.
Yes.
And that...
That starts as stroke play, doesn't
it? That started as 54-hole stroke play.
If I remember.
At least when it got down to the match play section, which was the Sunday, at least the guy who had won the stroke play actually won that, Brett Rumford.
Yes.
So he was playing well and he just kept playing well.
Yeah.
And it was his local course. So there is some logic there.
Yeah.
The sort of local Aussie guy won.
He could have feasibly been picked out of that field.
Yeah, I think so. Even though the format was so different, he kept it going. And then the other... the slightly frustrating thing, I thought, oh, I wonder how many of these played in that World Super Six Perth. And there was only two.
Right.
Thomas Detry of Belgium and Sam Brazel of Australia. And both of them got knocked out in the first round of the Super.
Right,
so
okay.
It's like, oh, what a shame we've not got like a semi-final event. So maybe this is one, you're brave if you have a bet pre-tournament, I think. And however much you might fancy England, Chris Wood and Andy Sullivan, you might be thinking, well, you know, 9-2, really.
Yeah, sure.
So I presume we're going to be betting in play, aren't we,
on this? Yeah.
So I would look to maybe see how it pans out in the early round, just to get a handle on if anyone's particularly enjoying the format. But then I suppose if Wood and Sullivan start fast, then they'll be cut fairly quick.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, maybe split your start, have a little bit at the start, and then maybe save a chunk for in running and
just
to see how it goes.
And that's it. That's fair enough. Do you have a token selection pre-tournament?
I think my token selection might be Italy.
Okay.
I don't want to take anyone too short.
Yeah.
So
not a pairing that I know are great deal
about.
Yeah,
so they're both youngsters. I think the idea of this tournament is to attract the younger element. So I think these two guys, Manasera has been around a long time, but he's still only 24.
Okay.
Paratore is 20. So they're both young guys, probably open to sort of quirky events
like this. Yeah, sure.
Manasera, because he won two European Tour events when he was 17. He really is. And one of those was at Wentworth, which is not too far from this course, actually. I've seen him do a few sort of celeb kind of pre-tournament. I remember once in Turkey he did a sort of a hit from high up on the balcony down to a sort of floating green. So he's had a few things where on the eve of tournaments he's been selected as the guy to do the fun stuff. So maybe that might just help a little bit. He's coming into some decent form again. Paratore's got some decent form as well. I don't know, I've just got a feeling that it would be a good, appropriate thing if two young guys came together and sort of showed that, you know, this is get into golf. Because this is what you said off air, that it's a bit 2020 cricket. They're trying to attract a younger audience.
Make it faster and more dynamic.
Yeah.
And
plus, as well, there might be a couple of these who might just feel a bit rushed with that shot clock.
Maybe some of the
older, steadier guys. So these youngs, I imagine they're more coming along and just hit it.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit of logic, maybe. But as I say, I didn't want to take anyone too short. Yeah. You could argue that Levy and Bordy will go well with a 7-1.
Yeah, sure.
So, yeah, I wouldn't want to take anyone maybe 10-1 or under. There's, what, 5 teams at 10-1 or under?
Yeah.
So I'll bypass in them. And then the first ones I get to, I think they're in good form, young guys.
Yeah.
14-1, but it's a bit of a guess.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, a token selection then for Italy at 14-1 in that goal sixes, but it may be an in-play project.
Yes, that's fair to say.
Good stuff, Dave. Remind us of your selections then for both events and your staking strategy this week.
Yeah, so in the Wells Fargo Championship, I will go for Webb Simpson at 33-1 and Bill Haas at 33-1. I'll have a point each way on both of those.
Good stuff.
And in the spirit of innovation, I will have a point. Well, we're half 1-2, aren't
we
there? I think I'll be gutted if they got to the final and they lost. So I'll have half a point each way on Italy at 14s.
Okay, tremendous stuff then. Thank you for your thoughts, Dave. You can follow Dave on Twitter at Dave Tindall Golf, and the golf podcast regulars at D Kellner is Dave Kellner, at M Grenham is Mike Grenham. They'll possibly be tweeting out some thoughts surrounding the events this week, and they'll hopefully return on the podcast next week. Dave, pleasure as always, and best of luck with the bets this week.
Yeah, cheers, Sam.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.